We are not, in fact, currently screaming for ice cream. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The consumer goods giant Unilever announced this week that it is going to spin off its ice cream business that includes names like Ben & Jerry's, Popsicle, Klondike. The ice cream business, it turns out, is pretty chilly these days. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on why that is and how the industry plans to defrost demand.
We do eat a lot of ice cream in the U.S., about 12 pounds per person annually, according to the USDA. But we used to eat more, about 16 pounds per person in the year 2000. Bob Roberts leads the food science department at Penn State. He says people's preferences are evolving.
You're constantly screaming for indulgent and yet constantly screaming for healthy and healthful.
Roberts, who's also done some consulting for Unilever, says there's a hunger for more dairy-free options, which means I scream, you scream for non-standardized plant-based frozen desserts.
And that's a space where I don't think anybody's hit a home run yet, but somebody will hit a home run sooner or later. They've had a couple of doubles.
Robert says we're still figuring out the best ways to coax better flavors out of fava bean protein and pea protein.
Taste always wins, right? So if we want to mass market this stuff, it can't just be good for you.
Ice cream also faces a lot of competition from other sweets. University of Arkansas agricultural economist Trey Malone says one way to punch through all the choices is for small producers to lean into local flavors and traditions.
Just looking at the customers that you have in your backyard and try to make a real connection with those people.
For example, here in Baltimore, one flavor I've seen is Old Bay Caramel. And Malone says, you never know. Maybe that Old Bay or pickle-flavored ice cream will end up taking off with people everywhere. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Federal prosecutors in New York say two men have been charged with conspiracy to transmit trade secrets. They're alleged to have started a business in China using battery manufacturing technology stolen from Tesla. Prosecutors say they tried to sell the proprietary information too. One man, a Canadian citizen living in China, has been arrested. The other remains at large. Southwest Airlines says it has tentatively reached an agreement with its flight attendants union that would raise their pay. The new contract covers nearly 20,000 cabin crew members. Southwest stock is pretty much flat this morning. The family that owns Nordstrom's wants to take the currently publicly traded company private. They tried this 6 years ago unsuccessfully. Nordstrom stock is down 1.7%. AI tools will change, undoubtedly, the way we work. They're already starting to. But the path to productivity doesn't appear to be a straight line. Kian Gohar is an AI researcher and CEO of Geolab, a leadership development firm. He's the author of a new study taking a look at the effects of AI tools on ideas, workflow, and performance. It's published in the March-April Harvard Business Review. Gohar spoke with my colleague, David Brancaccio.
So you designed this experiment, and you had actual humans take on different tasks. Some of them were just working on the problem, standard style, traditional. Others also had access to generative artificial intelligence system.
Yeah, exactly. We were really interested in measuring the quantity of ideas they developed and the quality of ideas they developed. And as a result came in, we were shocked. AI-assisted teams only had modest gains compared to their human-only counterparts. And this was because these generative AI models are designed to give us the most likely answer to a potential question. We've had decades of conditioning to type in the perfect term in a search engine to get the right answer. And humans have a bias to settle for acceptable or good enough answers. Most teams are repeating the same behavior with AI and predictably getting average answers. And this is sort of what we call the tyranny of the search box. It's not the tech that's the problem. It's how humans use the tech that's the problem.
I'm hearing that there may be some learnings from your research that might inform even individual use.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd recommend talking to AI like you would to a colleague and give the AI context about the topic. We really need to have more chat and less bot.
You're going to have people in companies at top levels. You're going to have teachers going, how do I get the training to figure out how I'm supposed to interact with these AI devices?
Yeah, the school systems are probably most likely the ones who are going to train younger generations on AI soft skills. But if you're in the workforce, we're seeing a big expectation gap. Chief HR officers are trying to teach people how to use it, but they can't do it at scale. This leaves employees left on their own to experiment on learning AI. Now, as part of our research, we developed a conversational AI drill coach that trains all employees on conversational AI at scale. We're seeing teams 10x their team's AI skills in just 10 days.
It sounds like you might be able to train yourself as some sort of facilitator. It's like in most families, there's the go-to IT person. It may be that each organization has a few go-to AI people. But what are some of the questions that you have going forward?
The part we're trying to figure out is how do teams learn to use these AI skills most effectively so that they become habits rather than being a chore? Like most good things, you don't become an Olympic champion overnight. You go to the gym and train for years until you get better at it. And that's where we are right now with AI.
Kian Gohar, AI researcher and CEO of the leadership development firm Geolab, his co-researcher Jeremy Utley at Stanford. The article, Don't Let Generative AI Limit Your Team's Creativity, we'll have a link to that along with his AI best practices on our website, marketplace.org. Mr. Gohar, thank you very much.
David, thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor.
Kian Gohar there was speaking with my Marketplace colleague, David Brancaccio. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.